Welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. This is our audio game jam where we work out kind of weird, crazy game ideas and turn them into something that seems at least somewhat feasible. So we are joined by a very special guest today. My name is Ryan Heyman, also known as H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel, also known as Q.
And joining us in the studio is, let's say, a Twitter sensation turned author. He is famous for participating in a just for fun idea of it was one of those like one like is one video game idea type of challenges that he put in front of himself, and he ended up turning that into a book, and we'll hear more about that. Mr. Nate Crowley.
Hello, really lovely to be on the show.
Well, thanks for joining us. It's a lot of fun to have. I was reading through a few of the tweets and ideas that you had put out, and there was some really daft and bizarre stuff in there, which is exactly the kind of thing that we're into.
Well, I find this immensely therapeutic to be joining you in doing this. I think 6 weeks at one, no, and nearly 8 weeks in all, just coming up with games. Is all day until I had 1,000. So I think this is quite a nice way to unwind psychically after doing that.
Yeah, I can imagine the original list put together must have been a little bit more rapid fire. I don't want to suggest quantity over quality, but like you would need to come up with names that were catchy more than like a fully fleshed out idea that you might want to actually sit down in an arcade and play one day.
Don't know who said it. It's often attributed to Lenin, but quantity has a quality all of its own. And that was the watchword when I was doing that list. When it came to putting the book together, I had to find kind of 100 that were at least coherent. And that was a fun process. And I obviously developed those a little bit more so I could write about them in the book. But still, there were some pretty weird ones made it in.
You know what? I like that Nate's on the show this week because it's nice to have someone else who has felt the sheer panic of trying to flesh out an idea that they don't know is viable. And to have someone else that has experienced that is just going to be, I think, make this a lot of fun.
Oh, I've been in that trench with you. Yes.
The book is called The 100 Best Video Games, in parentheses, That Never Existed. And this book is still upcoming, but you can pre-order it now, I believe, from Amazon. And I think it will also be in some like physical locations as far as booksellers and that type of thing. Is this a widely distributed thing? And is it, we are both Americans ourselves. You are a British gentleman. And so is this going to be primarily like a British publication, or is it going to be kind of a worldwide phenomenon?
I was talking with Rebellion, the publishers, actually. It's quite British as a project. One of the games is about the stars of a British soap opera annihilating the escapees from a crashed alien troop ship. That's BeastEnders. But we do think it's got international appeal. I know there's going to be physical distribution of some kind or another in the States. I know some of the larger chains are carrying it. So hopefully, if people prefer to buy their books physically, that should be perfectly doable.
Excellent. And that book does feature a little bit more kind of fleshed out ideas. There's some concept art for a lot of or all of the ideas in that book, the game titles. And it's kind of written in such a way where it implies that these games already existed. And it's kind of a retrospective on these games that, can't actually be played.
I, for one, will be buying the book simply to find out what Star Trek B on the Bridge is.
It's very stressful is what it is. It was so much fun. I had like a team of 15 genuine games industry concept artists and sort of asset designers. I could just sort of email them you know, 6 a.m. and say, right, yeah, could you just Photoshop a bee really poorly into a picture of Riker for me? Wonderful stuff. That's a power no man should wield.
Oh, so good.
So with all of these concept artists at your disposal, did you ever get the sense that when you emailed them an idea and say, could you draw up this completely insane thing? Did you get the sense that they were like, oh, finally, something interesting to do? Or was it more like, oh, no, one of these again?
Well, I was presuming it would be the latter. To be fair, they often did the job perfect the first time. But sometimes I was sending requests like, look, you know, the wolf is looking really good, but please, can you give it, you know, a university graduation cap and human hand, please, as specified in the text? You know, and I was thinking, oh, they're really going to get fed up with me. But it turns out, you know, a lot of them spend, you know, because a lot of people in the industry will know what work's like on especially sort of big sort of AAA games. Mm-hmm. People can spend absolutely every day drawing, you know, minutiae of military uniforms again and again and again.
Sure,
so to get an email out of the blue and say, you know, look, draw a cop undergoing severe grief. It's refreshing. It's cathartic. Well, that's what they taught me.
As long as it's not draw 400 versions of a cop going through severe grief.
For more details on the book, we would suggest that our listeners check out an interview that Nate did with Kanan Rintz, one of the other podcasts that I work for. He did an interview with Leon Cox over there, and that is just put out as Kanan Rintz Extra, an interview with Nate Crowley. It goes a lot more in depth as to the process, as to the book, as to the original tweet storm over those few months there, and give some good history. It's a really interesting interview, and Leon was the one that kind of hooked us up as well. So this is a entirely different type of exercise, and we're going to be giving you the floor on all three of the pitches today. You're going to be bringing us pitches from the book, from the, you know, list of 1,000 tweets, and I believe even one that is just kind of out of the blue, something that the public has not read.
I think the term you're looking for, H, is a playwright exclusive pitch.
Yes.
Much sexier.
Let's jump into the first pitch. What is the first one that you're bringing us today?
Okay, so the first one is one from the book, and the British title is Motorway Sprinter, but I guess in the States you might call it Freeway Sprinter. To get the idea of this game, it's very simple. I want you to remember when you were a child, or maybe even, you know, as an adult with a flourishing imagination, looking out the window of a speeding motor vehicle on an interstate highway, and, you know, you're looking out the passenger window, and maybe you sort of bounce your eyes along the landscape. With the movement of your eyes, you imagine a small figure running along the barriers at the center of the road, maybe jumping onto passing cars.
Yeah, yeah.
We've all done that, it seems. It seems to be universal. And the idea of this game, very simply, would be something you'd do through augmented reality, maybe sort of a Google Glass type proposition. I don't know if the technology's there. There's the caveat. It's certainly getting there, but it would need to track your eye movement, and it would superimpose onto your vision, you know, onto a screen in front of your eyes. It would overlay a little person on the road, which you could then he would sprint alongside. You could move them with your eye movement, and, I don't know, collect coins. That's where you guys come. I thought it'd be an interesting idea for a game.
Cool. So let's go ahead and start the clock on that one. This is something that I am very, very familiar with. This idea of imagining a little video game character running along the kind of the medium in the middle of the road, or all these different scenarios, except for me, instead of being kind of Mario inspired, as I'm sure it was for maybe the folks who were like 10 years older than I am, for me, I was haunted by the unshakable vision everywhere that I go of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater tricks everywhere.
Oh.
And so literally, you know, anytime driving down the road, and it got to be the point at which, like, I would want to, like, will myself to stop imagining it because it was so pervasive everywhere that I went. But, you know, Tony Hawk had this open and freeing sense of dominance of his environment in those games, and being able to grind on and jump off of, like, every imaginable object in the environment that it became like an invasive thought in my mind.
First of all, this is one of those ideas or something that I think I had as a kid that I've never talked about because I just assumed it was a crazy, you know, Ryan Q having this feeling as a kid. But coupled with it is that sort of sensation I think that a lot of people have had, probably everybody, is sticking your hand out a moving car window and kind of riding the air with your hand. And I love the idea of being able to, you know, the person who's like dashing or jumping or even skateboarding on this medium, being able to kind of like stick their hands out and get a little bit of flight going over some of the jumps or something is like a power up or whatever.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I hadn't considered power ups. That's good. Okay, so sort of aerofoil element.
Yeah, this could be kind of like a wind sail type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to jump over a truck, right? That's going to take something.
Yeah, if you had some level of physical control as well, you know, your eyes could be doing the brunt of the work, but if you need that extra high jump, you could kind of angle like a piece of cardboard or a little antenna or something outside to hit the wind just right. And then that might kind of adjust the trajectory that you're able to jump or however you're locomoting.
What about a modified Nintendo Power Glove from the late 80s? You would actually hold out the window and it would detect the airflow. I mean, that, you know, might be a safety problem.
Well, we're not here to explore safety. As this person is cruising down this medium, whatever, how they're running or skateboarding, is this game ever a bad guy? Did we ever imagine out our window that there were like definitely obstacles that were, you know, a threat to that momentum? Was it like, I know sometimes light poles felt like they would like stop me.
Yeah, that was always the thing that caught me up is that, you know, if I'm imagining like a Tony Hawk scenario, grinding down this medium, then all these light poles kept getting in the way and I never knew exactly what to do with that. And I can imagine in a Google Glass type scenario where it's using like algorithms and like pattern recognition software to determine, you know, what is foreground, what is background. It's going to look like to the software like he's hitting a wall, you know, every 3 seconds because you just got this straight vertical beam. This might be, and this actually probably is way beyond the scope of the technology, but just for fun to imagine it, maybe someday, is that you could kind of like swing between them, kind of like a Clue Land type of thing, kind of slalom your way between the poles.
I used to imagine that. I used to imagine how like a gibbon brachiates between branches. I would sometimes imagine, you know, the protagonist as an ape swinging between the, because I know what you mean. Something sort of inherently adversarial about street lamps in that context. But my way around that, was to have the character as a swinging ape. But yeah, the technology there.
What in your mind is the aesthetic ideal of something like this? Are you going all the way back to Nintendo era stuff or pre that? Or are you thinking this is kind of like a super modernized game?
I was thinking like a stick man, but, you know, just to abstract it to something really simple. But I'm not going to lie, I'm really feeling the Tony Hawk's thing.
Let's kind of also explore, obviously, you came in with the idea of someone running or skating, perhaps across the ground, running into all these poles and jumping off of objects and stuff. But equally well, it would be interesting to have something that's kind of up in the air, like the Donkey Kong Jr. swing through the elevated space as well. And you can kind of use this in different scenarios as well than if you had somebody that you would kind of fly around or somebody that would swing between objects. It might be a little easier for the software to distinguish between foreground and background if the background is more like the sky rather than like a street or something.
What about when you blink, the character changes forms?
Oh, that's cool. You could also do screen wipes, like if a car is passing by or you do hit one of those poles, it's kind of like flashes to almost like a kind of a montage, if you will, of realities. This is such an interesting idea. Like the idea of momentum, I don't know if like the risk reward here is trying to like incentivize someone to perhaps stay in the air the whole time, or if it's more about keeping just straight up speed going, because I assume it's almost like an auto scrolling type of level.
Let me take this in a kind of different direction, since we, you know, we have a couple minutes left, and think about, you know, we've envisioned this being something you would play in the car the whole time, but what if this technology was used as kind of like an AR platformer that could be played in any scenario, even when you're just kind of sat at your desk? The AR software would kind of look around you and find anything that could possibly be like a platform, and then it would just kind of give you a goal, like get over here, and you have to find a way to maneuver your character, you know, over your desk, jumping from computer monitor to your Amiibo shelf to your, you know, Oculus sensor to climbing up the posters on the wall. And then you can like really use this in any scenario.
I love that. Do you remember the old Worms games? Where you'd have various tools. You'd have like the jetpack, the grappling hook, the ninja rope, and maybe you could have a similar array of stuff, and you've only got a limited amount of them, right?
Yeah, and it'd be kind of fun, even if this was like a desktop game, to be able to load in a photo. And so you could load in like a picture of your home, you can load in, you know, the Mona Lisa, and it would turn all of these automatically into like some sort of a platforming stage. You would need to make sure that it was all possible and not overly simple, but that's for the programmers to figure out.
You could go to like the National Gallery and like find out which paintings are navigable and which ones aren't. It'd be really funny. You know, you get people talking online like, oh, I can't get past Caravaggio. That'd be so cool.
This is the next Pokemon Go. I'm totally ready for it.
I think there was a chibi robo game for the 3DS before that 2D platformer. There was some sort of like an AR type of chibi robo where it would tell you, I need something that possesses this shape. And you would have to take a picture of something with your 3DS camera that was that shape. It had some sort of a level of recognition and interaction with the real world. And I never played that game, so I don't know what the Chibi Robo fellow would do with the shape once you found it. But yeah, just taking those everyday objects and turning them into something that's game world appropriate would be interesting.
Technology is already there then, to some extent.
Yeah, to a degree. That is our 10 minutes on that one, so we're going to have to close the book there. Did you come in with a title for that one? If not, we can workshop something together.
Well, that was Motorway Sprinter in the book.
Oh, yes,
that
right.
Quite UK. So maybe we can come up with something a little bit snappier.
I'm also for Barriers Be Damned.
I like that. I want to go with that.
Cool. Let's go with that one for now, then. Let's move into our second idea. This is back to you, Nate.
Okay, powering through then, like a man smashing through a street lamp. on to the next idea. Now, this one does have a name, okay? This game is called Nightmare, but that's mayor spelled as in the municipal head of a town.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. I talked about this one very briefly with Leon when he interviewed me. This game it's a city builder. So imagine city skylines, classic SimCity, something like that. But what you do, you have two players who play this game, and it's asynchronous. So one player plays as the mayor, and it's their job to run the city by day, develop it, make it better, manage the finances, all the things you'd do in a regular city builder. But then after an hour of play, or something, the in-game clock reaches nightfall, the game stops and the save file is emailed to the second player, who is the nightmare. And the nightmare's job is to just absolutely screw up everything possible that the day mayor has done. Now, some of these things might be overt. You know, you could straight up trash buildings, or, you know, you might set problems in motion that might only be discovered several days later. So your whole job is to cause havoc. And so it's an adversarial, asynchronous multiplayer city builder.
Great. Let's open up the book on this one. Start the clock there. So this is cool. I think it would be especially a lot of fun to play as the nightmare, of course, because it's fun to destroy things. What I'm having a hard time picturing right now, and this is what we're going to kind of discover as we go, is how does the game not end up just being like a back and forth, like a zero sum game? Like every advancement is just set back to zero at the beginning. And I can imagine for both folks, since ultimately the other player is kind of undoing what they have done, how would it not get immensely frustrating?
You know, it's funny to hear because we have a game like this in America. It's called President of the United States. And I wonder, actually, taking cues from something like that, as dreary as that subject can be these days, right? If it's a city builder, city builders usually have people giving you feedback through, like, I think in City Skylines, it's like a fake Twitter that's always coming in. Mm. But if there is always, you know, sort of people's resistance to change in policy, or similarly, it's very hard to walk back an entitlement that a group of people get, like, oh, you know, day mayor said, you know, no smoking everywhere. Night mayor said gambling is legal. Now they're both kind of like beholden to some of the other's policies. They can't necessarily just belay the last set of priorities.
Yeah. Yeah. What if instead of the appetite for destruction being all that is fueling the desires of the nightmare, what if they both had different populations that they represented? Kind of the title brings to mind the Nightmare Before Christmas for some reason, and just the mayor that would switch between like the happy face and the scared face on the back of his head.
Oh, yeah.
And so what if like we can have this kind of like Christmas town, Halloween town type of dynamic where during the day, you've got the regular citizens that are living, and then during the night, all the regular citizens are asleep, and then the, like, monster people come out, and they just like to be gross, and they, you know, they drink sewage, and they, that kind of thing, where just everything that they want is kind of the opposite or adversarial somehow to the way that the normal citizenship would like to be. And so both these mayors are coming in with the best of intentions and, you know, just trying to represent their own populace. But it's very difficult for both these people to coexist at the same time.
Oh, that's cool. So in the end, there's almost a co-op element where you're trying to find some kind of synthesis.
Yeah, yeah. And you can go for, you can be very competitive and say, you know, nightmare people are the ones who deserve the town and we're going to maximize the town to serve our population best. Or you can say like, well, okay, if everyone is kind of moderately happy, then that's pretty good overall, which is kind of, again, a lot of the things that real politicians have to deal with.
Oh, it'd be really interesting as well, because you could, if you were the day mayor, you could receive the save file, open it up and be like, oh, okay, so all the sewage flows down Main Street now above ground. I'm going to have to deal with that.
Yeah, what if we just turn that into a sewage river, just build a bridge over it, turn it into a tourist attraction, and kind of make the best of the situation?
I do like the idea of one mayor having to kind of rebrand aspects of the city that perhaps their constituency does not like appreciate or agree with, just to kind of appease them. You know, one is, this is the open sewerage main. Like, we all love it. The stink is great. Like, that's the nightmare's deal. And then the day mayor is, yeah, has to build a bridge over it and be like, come see the incredible stink of tourism. The sort of reluctant acceptance of each other's policies, because so much of this has those allegories of any two political parties that are majority stake or minority stake in any sort of country, where you're going to do things that just make a group unhappy. And it's maybe the policies that you're choosing affect what kind of population is coming in to the town. You know, in City Skylines, it's totally, you build housing, people show up. Maybe it's depending on what you build, different types of people show up.
Hmm. Maybe there's like a dungeon keeper element to it. Like, if day mayor builds power plants with lots of electricity, that's got the knock-on effect. It's more likely to attract Frankensteins.
If a mayor did choose to be a little bit more competitive and adversarial and really want to protect something that they had built, if they could set traps for the day mayor or the nightmare or whatever. And so if in the kind of predictable realm of like, okay, he's definitely going to want this statue gone, then you can dig up pits around it and fill it over with leaves. And so anytime the construction vehicles come by, they end up falling in the pit. And then that's that you know, that mayor's day is pretty much ruined.
It is kind of a game about ruining somebody else's day. I'm thinking about the structure of it, and is it interesting at all, as opposed to kind of a dedicated one person trying to screw over somebody else over and over again, which might actually become personal after a while, honestly. Yeah. It's like, what are you doing, man? Like, I'm trying to do all this stuff. But if there's an aspect to it that is, you're choosing at the beginning of the game, I'm day mayor or I'm nightmare, and you are just constantly being served random towns, and you are trying to clean up something that has been destroyed by some random nightmare over and over again as day mayor, and as nightmare, you're just continuously trying to do the antithesis of that on city after city, and there's kind of that global scale of like, oh, nightmares are kind of winning right now versus day mayors are kind of winning.
Oh, so you mean to say it would like your save files would just be uploaded into the cloud and passed on to a random user of the game?
Yeah, exactly. And then it's just kind of what group of people is enacting the most policies or having the most success.
Like the Splatfests.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it almost gets kind of like Hearthstone or something where there's like a meta. Uh-oh. Well, Wolfmen are like everywhere at the moment. Daymares do not have a good system in place to stop Wolfmen. This is an issue. You'd have people getting together to work it out.
I like each side inventing sort of new follies to counteract the other, right?
Now, this is completely kind of out of left field. This is not exactly what we're talking about, but kind of as a parallel exercise that might give us some insight as to how to balance these competing desires is, you know, I like the idea of both teams are working towards goals that aren't necessarily oppositional, but have too much overlap going in the opposite directions to where they're bound to kind of screw the other one up a little bit. And it got me thinking about like a drawing game, like you would find in the Jackbox Party Pack, kind of like Drawful, where two players have, basically they take turns drawing a picture, but they each have a different prompt. One player might have, like, you know, the country of Australia, and the other player might have Batman. And so one player draws a drawing. They have 30 seconds or something to draw a drawing, and then it's handed off to the second player, and they have to take whatever that drawing is and add whatever they can to make it look like Batman. And then it goes back to the first player, and they have to take the Batmanized picture and, again, kind of morph that into an Australia thing. And then at the end of it, they kind of look at it and they say like, oh, what a weird, silly thing we created. And they see the other person's prompt. And it's like, okay, I see where we came from with this one. And so in that way, it's not frustrating. It's not adversarial in the way that they are destroying anything. They're just kind of like working towards separate creative ends that they can look back on in the end and kind of laugh together. And so I think as a kind of morale thing, that would be a goal of mine as a designer in designing this game. It's like, I would want people at the end of it to not look back and say like, well, I lost because he destroyed all my things, but to just look at it and say, wow, what a silly, weird thing we created, and just kind of throw their heads back and laugh together.
Yeah, it would be interesting to have the prompts of the citizenry in this game maybe be ambiguous enough in terms of their needs so that it might be interpreted different from the nightmare to the day mayor, or each mayor is being fed information from their advisors as like what they think the population wants, and those are actually not the same thing, so they're both trying to reconcile information with each other.
It's kind of reminding me of that 80s movie where, was it like one guy who couldn't see and another guy who couldn't hear?
Oh, with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
I think that one was See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Oh, man.
For years I thought that was a cop movie, but apparently it's not. So there you go.
I think it was that they were both just regular citizens, and they both witnessed a murder collectively, but neither of them possessed the full senses. And so they were trying to run away from the people who were trying to cover up the crime, and they were trying to, you know, tell the police or, you know, get those people in jail. But yeah, it's an amusing film. It's been a long time since I've seen that.
I guess by contrast, I mean, the thing about Nightmare is, and this goes with your idea about like synthesis and, look at this weird sort of thing we cobbled together, it would be so important that the players couldn't communicate. I don't know. I guess it'd have to be like an honor system. You would have to not know, like, so the element of surprise was there.
Yeah, or if it was like an anonymous thing, like Q was suggesting, then, yeah, you wouldn't be able to communicate. But, you know, as much more as there is to explore in this realm, we're going to have to close the municipal books right now. This one already has a name. This is Nightmare. But it feels like there's a whole lot more to talk about in this one. There's a whole lot of different avenues to explore. And so we would encourage all of our community to get in touch with us on Twitter at PlaywrightCast, or go to our website, playwrightcast.com, and put a comment on this episode with where you would take any of these ideas, really. Yeah, I think there's a kind of an infinite realm of possibilities for where this one could go. So we're very curious to hear what you would add to it.
Or if you just want to talk about Australian Batman.
Or hey, in the spirit of the suggestion, you can destroy the idea as well. Find creative ways to tear it down and undo all the work that we've done. But we have one pitch left today, again from Nate. What are you bringing us with this one?
Okay, so this is just kind of a concept. I can't work out how to manifest this, so I really need you guys.
Yeah, this is the juicy stuff.
I love sci-fi. One thing I find is really interesting is hive minds, right? So they're really, really common foe in sci-fi stories. You know, these sort of millions of identical units that all think as one, and, you know, like the bugs in Starship Troopers or the Borg in Star Trek. I want to know what, and I'm thinking an FPS, but that's not set in stone. I want to know what an FPS game would look like where you play as the Hive Mind. And I don't, so, I mean, it's kind of been done in strategy and stuff. You know, I still think it could be more imaginatively done in strategy games, but I want a first-person shooter game where you are the Hive Mind. I don't know how to do that.
All right, well, let's start the clock on that. First thing this immediately makes me think of is the wonderful tradition that we had for a little while there of Twitch plays Pokemon and Twitch plays Dark Souls. All these games that they threw up on Twitch.tv, a streaming site for those of you not in the know, where the viewers would be able to comment in button prompts. And basically the system would just interpret those comments in the chat window and would translate that into like in-game action. And it was like kind of a hive mind thing, like too many cooks in the kitchen a lot of the time. You know, it's somewhat easy to play through a game of Pokemon, but if everyone is trying to feed commands all at once, and, you know, you're basing your commands on things that happened 30 seconds ago, and there are some people who are just trolls that are trying to screw everything up. You know, it ended up taking a very long time, but eventually they ended up beating Pokemon. And I think they've beaten all the Pokemon games at this point. And they've beaten Dark Souls. And, you know, there were a few kind of rule adjustments as it broke down. I think Dark Souls, they turned into more of like a turn-based thing where the video would freeze every 5 seconds or so. And then it would take an aggregate of all of the button commands that were given for that 5 second period and spit out the most popular one and go based on that. And so it was kind of like a voting system in a way of how to play moment to moment Dark Souls. This kind of thing definitely has a lot of promise in the communal space, but I could also see this working as a couch multiplayer type of thing. Octodad, Dadliest Catch, especially has a mode on, at least on the Wii U version. I'm not sure about the other versions, but I'd imagine so, where the players each take control of a different limb and would try to maneuver Octodad around this world, kind of working together, but at the same time, you know, how graceful is it going to be?
I keep thinking of the Borg, like you had mentioned, Nate, because I'm a big TNG fan. And there's almost this, hive minds are interesting because it's sort of an overarching goal that any player can, or sort of any character can seemingly be fully possessed by that hive mind at any moment, but maybe in most of the time they're just kind of working towards the goal of the hive mind. So I wonder if it's almost that sort of field view, Call of Duty style, like a battle, you know, commander can see the map and tell units what to do, but also the commander has the ability to sort of possess any one of the on-the-ground troops at any moment and actually execute a very specific order, or likewise cut a defective unit from if you're not following orders, or somebody is in your hive, essentially, that is not doing what you tell them to do, you can, like hive minds are one to do, eliminate that threat.
So would you have those, if you're like the synaptic node, if you will, and you've got your subunits, would they be AIs or would they be other players?
That's a good question. That's what I'm not sure of. It seems to me like there's an aspect to having it be other players that kind of at any moment could have the agency taken away from them is an interesting allegory to the hive mind thing of like, it's essentially Call of Duty for basically everyone. But if the hive mind decides it needs my quote body for something, it's going to just go possess me and do it. And I'm victim to it, essentially.
Or what if it is kind of like Battlefield plus WarioWare? Now, I was playing through Battlefield 1 the other day, and the opening mission, you can play through one of those World War One kind of trench runs and push forward the line, but you've got a whole bunch of enemy troops coming at you from the other direction, and it's a really dangerous space to be, of course. And when you would die, you would just have your consciousness kind of like Driver San Francisco style transported into another character, and that character that you were playing as originally would be dead. And so you could do like a Battlefield type of arrangement, one of those 64 player grand matches, but every 5 seconds or however long, each player would be randomly shuffled into another character on their team, and they have to very quickly figure out, okay, where am I? Are there any threats around me? Should I be shooting anyone right now?
So everybody's kind of possessing everything.
Yeah.
That was how I was originally thinking. I love the idea that, like, especially, this is going to be a sci-fi game. So, I'm not saying World War One was a calm affair, but, if we're looking at this sort of genre, I'm thinking battlefields with hundreds of AI units. Your average go at it, your average life is only going to be like 8 or 9 seconds. It could be a really rapid, disorienting thing where you're constantly sort of being thrust into a new viewpoint and being like, okay, what's going on here? It's done.
Especially if there's like vehicles that you're thrust into as well. Like you find yourself like, all of a sudden I'm in an X-wing and I better pull up or I'm going to crash.
Oh, man. I was just thinking about something like that, where if the hive mind, theoretically in the Zerg, as an example, in StarCraft, you're not necessarily just a unit. You could be a vehicle at any moment, right? So like the tank or something is also able to be possessed by this AI, and the people who are in it are like, I guess hive mind is taking control of the tank. Like the hive mind decided it needs the tank on the other side of the battlefield, so that's where we're going.
That's sick. I'm an ultralisk now.
Exactly. I'm flying through the air. It's going to be nuts.
This is kind of a different thing. I like this idea of disorientation and randomness and not knowing what it's going to throw at you next. But it also kind of got me thinking, like, what if you were playing like one of those typical like war games, but before you die, you have to press a button to like eject your consciousness into somebody else, and then it would send you to a different character on the battlefield. But if you didn't hit the eject button, then it's game over. And so you always have to remember to, kick out your consciousness to be able to kind of like Doctor Who style.
Regenerate, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's cool, but it would need to be something, because if it's just a button press, then it's literally like, once that's in your muscle memory, you're probably always going to do it, and you're just going to get irritated when it isn't. What if it's something a bit more complicated, like something you might not be able to manage every time? I don't know, like almost like a little puzzle or something.
Or like if you needed somebody else within a line of sight.
Yeah.
And so, you could, if you're going deep behind enemy lines and you're getting away from your unit, then you could set up like an antenna or something that would give you a higher vantage point to be able to line of sight your way to a different unit, but that would slow you down or give away your position, some sort of a risk reward there.
I like the idea of the sort of when your Titan is blowing up in Titanfall, you have to eject and successfully land on something. If your consciousness had to kind of depart and then successfully, you know, target and land on another unit is interesting. And then that led me to this idea of what if you have two hive minds that are just playing against each other and everything on the battlefield or this arena match is just essentially like a corpse or, you know, an unoperating vehicle. And every, you know, as long as something is empty and vacuous, a hive mind can kind of transfer into it. And the warfare is just being waged.
That's
like
really
that.
Cool. It'd be like a one-on-one type shooter, kind of like an Unreal Tournament or a Halo or something like that, but using kind of like ghost trick rules where basically anything around you, or kind of like that game Everything that just came out, that Double Fine published, where, you know, all you have to do is basically kill whatever your opponent is at the moment, and you can do that by transferring your consciousness into anything around you, and maybe you would have some sort of like a limited health that could be permanently decreased over time, so it's not just like a constant unending realm of regeneration. Or maybe you had to, you know, get your consciousness to a new object within 3 seconds or something. Ooh, after death.
I got an idea. So if you've got like a health pool, right, like you were saying, some sort of arbitrary, you say you could start with 100 and you lose some permanently every time you die. What if you can section portions of it off to put limited AI in other objects?
Oh,
cool.
Yeah.
Dedicate some of your mental resource, right?
Yeah. So it's like, okay, I've got like 100 brain points. What about if I put 8 of them into this rusty tank, so it's got a basic, you know, go forward and shoot anything it sees sort of thing? I'm imagining this happening in like a big, really baroque kind of sci-fi military scrapyard with just loads of robots and stuff, and two bored AIs just inhabiting the like a play war.
That's the best, because that is exactly what, like, you would imagine a bored AI exercise would be of, like, all right, well, I can do everything, so I'm going to do these things. I just love the idea of like one person being or possessing like a military unit or whatever. They see a tank roll up, and let's say, like, it's Nate, your concept of that Tate was actually just some temporary AI that the other hive mind dumped into the tank. That pulls up. I blow up the tank. I think I got that AI. And then really I turn around and he was possessing a guy with a shotgun, and boom, I'm gone.
Oh, because that also adds, like, you ever played like Hidden in Plain Sight? Like that party game, which is basically about you got loads of sprite NPCs on screen and you got to guess which ones are real players.
Yes.
And which,
right? And a spy party.
Yeah, if you act like you're a crappy AI in a tank, you can pull off exactly that kind of trick.
This is starting to explode out and get really exciting, but we have to close this one down. Unfortunately, we've run out of time there.
It happens again, every time. Like,
oh, I know. Yes, it's the most heartbreaking part of the show. Tons more places we can take this idea, and we open that up to the community. Throw in your ideas. Tell us what you would like to do with this idea of kind of a hive mind AI type of sci-fi battleground. And this one, does this one have a name?
Oh, no.
I have one idea. It's not great, but maybe like Mind Over Batter. Although then it sounds like a hive mind cooking game.
What about like Cyborg? Because they're bored.
Cyborg
is
very
good.
It's good
to have bored in the name of your video game title. That helps it fly right off the shelves.
Man, I keep going back to the idea of anytime there's like a hive mind, it's always possessing a single thing and calling itself we. So I wonder if it's, you know,
Wii
something.
Sports?
Where,
that's a good one.
Perfect. Wii Sports. Battlefield Wii.
Again, I feel like Wii in a title these days has been forever kind of curtained off.
Synapse fight. Brain war.
Brain war is actually very good.
Sunday, it's called Brain War.
All right, Brain War it is then. Anyways, that is 3 ideas for today, all coming from Nate Crowley. You can read 100 of his very best video game ideas in 100 Best Video Games That Never Existed, which is coming soon, to bookstores near you or online retailers that exist equally close to all people. Or you can read 1,000 of his game ideas with without the concept art on his Twitter, which is Frog Croakley, which is built on a fascination with frogs, not what you might expect it to mean in 2017. It is entirely harmless.
Yeah, the good kind of frogs, not political.
Yeah, because frogs are wonderful creatures. And in the heat of all of the political nonsense that's going on, we don't want to forget how wonderful and weird frogs are.
Hey, you know what? You're going to be able to get all the previous episodes of Playwright at playwrightcast.com. And on this episode, you'll be able to listen to Kanan Rance's interview with Nate, as well as pre-order that book on Amazon UK.
And we would also like to thank Protodome for our theme song, which is called Hello World. And you can find that over at Protodome's Bandcamp, as well as the rest of his wonderful music. Some excellent chiptune stuff, a little bit of singing every once in a while. It's a really high-energy, wonderful music there. And thank you, Nate, for coming on. Is there anything else that you would like to plug or draw people's attention to?
Yeah, my latest sci-fi novel is just out. That's called The Death and Life of Schneider Rack. You can find plenty of references to that on my Twitter, though. Mainly just want to say thanks to you guys. This has been a really fun hour. And I think we really made some beautiful things.
Thank you so much, Nate, for coming on the show.
Yeah, I think so as well. It's been a lot of fun. And as somebody who has explored this space of fake games before, it's very exciting to get to speak to a person with a like-minded ambition.
And good cover on that new book. Very, very good.
Q, would you like to give us something brief to kind of give our audience something to think about on the way out?
So this week I wanted to leave you with simply this: Battlefield 1, but with insects.
Mm. I like it. We'll see you next week.
Bye.